Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Sweden and England and earned a Bachelor of Science in Medicine, an MD in Medicine, and a PhD in Medical Science from Lund University, Sweden. He's devoted himself to Parkinson's research for the past 30 years because his father died from the disease. Since 2012, he's been the Associate Director of Research for Van Andel Research Institute and the Director of the Institute's Center for Neurodegenerative Science. His name? Dr. Patrick Brunden. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Dr. Patrick Brunden, the Van Andel Institute's Associate Director of Research and Director of the Institute's Center for Neurodegenerative Science. Doctor, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Well, thank you, Jack, for having me on your show.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad, please?
Sure. So I'm from Sweden, and I grew up in a family with a sister and two parents, and we spent a lot of time in the United Kingdom. And we had a totally life-changing event when my father was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. It was in the early 70s. I was about 12 years old. And although we are not great skiers, we tended to go once per year skiing for a week somewhere where there was snow, because in England there wasn't much snow, and we lived in the south of Sweden where there wasn't much snow. So we actually went to Austria. And one of our trips, I noticed that my father wasn't skiing as well as he used to. In fact, our whole family noticed that for the first time ever, we saw my father fall in the ski slopes. And not only did he fall when he was skiing, but we saw that we were queuing up for the lifts and he sort of slipped and fell over even when he was just standing on his skis down on the flat ground. So something wasn't quite right, and we didn't know what it was. And he'd had another medical condition a couple of years before, which had required 6 weeks of intravenous antibiotics. So we thought maybe it had something to do with this. His left arm seemed a little bit stiff. It turned out, however, when we returned back to England from the ski trip, and he went to visit the general practitioner with my mother in accompanying him, that he had Parkinson's disease, and the GP sent him on to a neurologist. I can even remember his name still today, this Dr. Saunders. And Dr. Saunders is supposed to have said to my mother and dad that I saw the minute or the second that you walked in through the door that you have Parkinson's disease. And, of course, this was a pivotal moment in our lives as a family. And things were never quite the same after that.
And as a 12-year-old young boy, you decide, I'm going to devote my life to this disease. And not only that, but in Sweden, there's 9.3 million people. And the prevailing culture, as you told me a few weeks ago, is that it's okay to be average. But you decide you're going to become one of the world's greatest researchers. Why did you decide to be the greatest when in Sweden it's average?
Well, to be honest, I don't think I decided that there and then. I think for the first year or so, we as a family were in shock and we were trying to cope and we didn't quite understand what had happened. So initially, it was just an awful thing that we didn't talk to people outside our family about it. And I can even remember once I was back visiting my sister who lived in Sweden then, and I saw that there was a magazine sold about Parkinson's disease. It was an article in the Swedish version of Reader's Digest. And I sneaked into the shop and purchased this magazine secretly, hid it away and read it carefully alone. And I read this story about somebody with Parkinson's disease. It was a horrible picture they were painting. Actually, they were describing the development of the first therapy, L-DOPA, but it was still a horrible picture. And then I also remember back in England, my mother and I happened to see a documentary on TV where we saw some people who had Parkinson's disease at a very advanced stage. And remember, my father had just been diagnosed. And, of course, these people were in wheelchairs and they were very, very ill. And we were totally stunned, and we said, this can't be the same Parkinson's disease as Dad has. So it wasn't an immediate response from a 12-year-old, I'm going to become a leader in Parkinson's disease research. For a long time, I was just shocked. And back then, there wasn't a way to vent this. There wasn't the things that we have today, like internet communities where you can find out, you can share, you can talk to others who've been affected. So it was a traumatic thing for the whole family. But I do know that I was about 13, I wrote in an essay, which I saw many, many years later when I was in school, I wrote that in the future, I would like to become a doctor and medical researcher. So, you know, soccer might have been at the front of my mind, but medical researcher was second on the list. And I had no idea exactly how successful I was going to be, but I was certain from then on that I would devote myself to something that potentially could help my dad.
And third on doctor's list might have been to become a hockey player and play for the Detroit Red Wings and all the other Swedish players.
That would have been great, but I think that is as unrealistic as it can get because I'm a southern Swede and we're not very good at hockey in the south of Sweden. But I'm proud to be Swedish when I see all the Detroit Red Wings players from Sweden. So.
We're talking to Dr. Patrick Brunden. When we come back, we'll ask him how he ever got from Sweden to Grand Rapids, Michigan. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. We're with Dr. Patrick Brunden. And in 1973, as 12 years old, his dad fell while skiing. And this led to Dr. Brunden deciding what he was going to do the rest of his life. Doctor, how was it you ever got from Sweden to Grand Rapids, Michigan?
It's actually quite a long and convoluted story, but I'll give you a short version of it. So I ended up in a school in Wales, an international school called Atlantic College, and part of the exam I had to do, it was an international baccalaureate. This was in the early days of the IB in the late 70s. I had to do an in-depth project in an area. So I decided I'll do it on Parkinson's disease. I was 17 at the time, and I told my biology teacher, I want to do this project because my father has the disease. And he looked at me and said, I don't think that's a good idea. But he was kind enough to help me find somewhere where I could do a project. And he sent me to the school's doctor, who sent me to a professor in the nearby university. And off I went, and I did my first experimental project in Parkinson's disease in the summer of 1979. And when I came back to Sweden, I was fortunate to get into medical school. And this was just a year later. And as I was listening to one of the lecturers talk, I heard that he offered an evening class for the second year medical students. This was a research class. And I looked up his name, and I found out that in the project that I had done in my school in Wales, I had actually cited some work that was related to the Swedish professor's research. His name was Anders Björklund, and he became my PhD supervisor. So it turned out that he was a world leader at repairing brains, in particular the brains of rats that had experimental Parkinson's disease, and we used cell transplants to repair them. And I was super excited. I entered that evening class that was really for second year students. And on April 1st, like an April Fool's joke, I would say, in 1981, he offered me a job. And I said, I don't know anything. I can't teach anything. But somehow I ended up as a junior teacher on the side of my medical studies. And I took a break. I did 5-6 years of research. Meanwhile, we developed this technology that we had used in rats, so much so that we actually tested it in patients. We started in 1987, so several years, but that's normal in research. And I was very, very excited to see eventually in 1990 that the procedure worked. So I went back, finished my medical school, started to practice clinically and saw patients. And I was thinking, I'll see patients 1 or 2 days per week, and I'll continue to do research the rest of the time. But fate wanted me to do something different because I got a lot of research funding to set up my own team. And I realized there wasn't time to do both. So I went back in the mid-90s and only did research, now no longer in my mentor's laboratory, but I had my own team back in Sweden. So we fast forward another decade or 15 years, and I'm sitting in our summer house in Sweden. Now I'm by that time married and have a couple of kids, and I get an email from the United States. And it had a very long PDF file attached to it, and I understood it had something to do with a job, but it was like 12 pages long, and I remember shouting over to my wife, I don't know what this is. It looks like they're looking for somebody to start up a new program, but to be honest, I didn't know where Grand Rapids was, so I was sort of hesitant. But my wife encouraged me, and she said, Patrick, you should respond and see what it is. So I did, and a few weeks later, I was sitting in a hotel room. I was attending a conference at the time, and a person called me from the recruitment firm in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and said, you should come over and look at this. A couple of months later, I did, in November, and I was intrigued. You know, there wasn't an established center yet, but there was the possibility of building a new Parkinson's disease research center within the Van Andel Research Institute. And I had been at Lund University by then for 31 years. It's a long time. And my wife said, this is maybe your chance, your opportunity. This is once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to do something that is really what you want to do in research from scratch, build it, something that really can make a difference. And it was a challenge, and, you know, we had kids. And it's a big thing to move. My wife has a career. She's a psychiatrist. She's a very successful researcher herself. So we'd have to start everything from scratch. But I was excited about the vision and the possibility. And there was a defining moment in an odd way when I met Dave Van Andel for the first time in April 2011. We had lunch together, and we were sort of comparing notes. Both of us being the sons of people affected by Parkinson's. Jay Van Andel, as you probably know, had Parkinson's disease, and that motivated Dave to support research in this area. And we were talking about how this had been, and I asked Dave, so when was your father born? Just out of curiosity. And he said, in 1924. And my father was born in 1924. And it was almost like from that moment on, I thought, this is meant to be. You know, that's just a remarkable coincidence. Here I am visiting, considering coming here. And the founding father, the generous donor who's making this possible, the late donor, actually was born the same year as my dad. And at that point, my wife and I together decided, let's have a go at this. And we moved here in January 2012.
Jay Van Andel was the co-founder of Amway with Rich DeVos. And as Patrick said, he had Parkinson's for 10 years. Betty Van Andel had Alzheimer's for 15. And the Van Andel family donated $1.2 billion, with a B, to start the Van Andel Institute. Doctor, tell us about the Van Andel Institute.
So it's quite a remarkable place because it's located in a city that didn't have any traditions of research or medical schools. So Jay Van Andel had the vision that he wanted to support research, and he appointed a group of very, very prominent scientific advisors. All of them unanimously said, you should put that in the Boston area, or you should put it over on the West Coast, you know, in the Bay Area, San Francisco or San Diego. And I've been told that he became even more determined at that point to actually put the institute here in Grand Rapids. It currently houses around 34 research groups, We work primarily in the areas of, obviously, in Parkinson's disease, as we've mentioned, but also in epigenetics, and the focus there is in cancer, and there is a special interest in the types of cancer that affect the skeleton. So those are the focus areas. We're still in a growing phase. The Institute has been around for 19 years, but we anticipate that we will grow and have maybe 45 groups of investigators, each one of them led by an independent professor. And our aim is to affect the lives of people who are affected by disease, and we really want to do work that's disease relevant. A lot of research that's done globally is focused on very, very basic mechanisms, understanding how a cell functions. We think that's very important, but we also want to apply that knowledge to patients and to new treatments.
David Van Andel, current chairman and CEO of Van Andel Institute, recently said the following. In a few short years, Patrick has established Van Andel Institute as a world leader in Parkinson's disease research. Through innovation and collaboration, he is accelerating discovery of novel treatments that will impact tens of thousands of people living with Parkinson's. We're honored to have him at the Institute and look forward with great hope for the future. That's Patrick Brundin. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula, and we're with Dr. Patrick Brundin. And 1.5 million people in the U.S. have Parkinson's today, and more than 10 million globally have the disease. Doctor, in layman's terms, what is Parkinson's disease?
It's a disease where certain groups of brain cells, those that conduct electrical impulses and communicate, they're the nerve cells, they gradually die. And they die in specific regions of the brain. Initially, the focus of researchers and doctors was on all the motor symptoms that are caused by the disease. By this, I mean problems with movement. So classically, the patients have slow movements. They have very rigid muscles, and they typically have a tremor. So those are the classical things that researchers focused on. For the last 10 or 15 years, we as a research community have gradually come to understand that the patients have many other problems that are related to the disease. They'll be constipated, they lose their sense of smell, they have changes in sleep, and importantly, they often become depressed. And in the more advanced disease, they often have problems with cognitive functions, understanding complex procedures or memorizing things. So we now understand that this disease, which primarily was a disease of movement, is a disease of many, many brain functions. We also are beginning to understand what causes the disease. When I was in medical school, we were told, thankfully, that this was not an inherited disease. For all of us who have parents affected, we think, is this going to happen to me or my brother or my sister? Now, in the years that have passed, and in the late 1990s this started, we have actually discovered as a research community that there are several genes that can be inherited that actually do cause the disease. Fortunately, they only account for about 5, maybe 10% of all the cases of Parkinson's. So while we know in 5 to 10% that there is a genetic change, in about 90%, we actually have no clue what causes the disease. And this is the holy grail of research in Parkinson's. We want to understand what causes the disease so that we can develop new therapies that slow down this relentless death of nerve cells in the brain. Because as it is today, there are quite good therapies for the movement symptoms, so we can cure some of the stiffness and some of the short steps in the shuffling gait, but we can't slow down the progression, and we can't prevent, for example, the development of depression or cognitive decline. And if we were to understand exactly why these cells die so slowly over years and even decades, they progressively die, we would stand a better chance of developing new drugs or new tricks to slow down the disease.
If you want to learn more, www.vai.org, vai.org. Dr. Michael J. Fox, Muhammad Ali, the late Robin Williams, Linda Ronstadt, President George H.W. Bush, these household names, these icons, all have Parkinson's. What have they done in the race to find a cure?
Well, first, before I say what they have done, I should say something that's very interesting. You actually said exactly what you will find in the newspapers and on the internet. Robin Williams had Parkinson's disease. George Bush Sr. has Parkinson's disease. Actually, that's not true. And one of the challenges is that the disease can look very similar to other diseases. So Robin Williams, it turned out, he had a closely related brain disorder called Lewy body dementia. And they didn't find out until they were able to look at his brain following his death. They looked at it in a microscope and they could see that he had a different disease. And as far as I know, George Bush Sr., he actually suffers from another disease of the brain, which isn't Parkinson's, but mimics Parkinson's disease. So it just shows that it's not easy. And in fact, in anything from 1 in 5 to even 1 in 3 patients who are diagnosed as having Parkinson's, they end up having something else. Now, that said, what have they done, all these people? Well, Michael J. Fox is perhaps the one I'd like to bring up first. He does have Parkinson's disease, and he had a form that affected him at a young age. He was around 30 years old when he was diagnosed. And he's done an amazing job in raising awareness, in raising research funds, which he distributes rapidly, and very significant research funds. And without his, Michael J. Fox Foundation for Parkinson's Research, we wouldn't be where we are today with our understanding of the disease. He's had a tremendous impact.
1.5 million Americans currently has it. It not only affects those 1.5 million people, but it affects their families, their loved ones. What would you say to a family member this evening or loved one who is watching someone go through Parkinson's?
First of all, I'd like to express some form of empathy because I understand that this is something difficult, and I really do appreciate that this is a disease that affects the whole family. And I would urge everyone, every family that is affected by the disease, to join support groups, join internet fora where you can discuss what you're going through. Because I've understood in the last 10 years, now that there are so many Facebook groups and other communities that you can join, that these are amazing sources of support, hope, energy, tips about how to get through the daily difficulties in life. So that's my first thing I would tell everyone. And I must say with some sadness that when my father was ill, you know, this was the 1980s, long before internet, and he passed away in 1995, those opportunities didn't exist. And I wish they had, because they would have helped us as a family a great deal. But the other thing I want to say to families affected by Parkinson's disease, never in history have we known as much as we do today about the disease. We have never been this far advanced in our research before, and the rate of discovery is really growing exponentially. Things are happening all the time. And while I would be stupid and unfair to promise a cure, I can say that there's a good chance that something's going to come up that will slow down the progression of the disease. Because there are so many new interesting ideas and there are so many initiatives that I just feel in my gut that something is going to work eventually. And we've always said as researchers, we always say it's going to take 5 years, it's going to take 10 years. But I guess never in history has that statement been more valid than today, because I just feel something is going to come up.
Tell us about your team at Van Andel Institute?
So our Center for Neurodegenerative Science is growing. We currently have 6 professors here who each have a group of, 5 or 15 young scientists working with them, some in training, some who are more experienced, who already have a PhD. And our center is growing. We're targeting to be about 10 people by the end of next year, and then maybe another 3 or 4 in the years that follow that. And we are assembling a multidisciplinary team. By this, I mean that we all have one common theme, that's Parkinson's disease, but each one of us looks at different things. So we have Dr. Moore, who's British. He looks at the genes that cause Parkinson's disease. We have Dr. Ma, who originally comes from China, and he studies how does a protein that can form clumps in cells, how does that impact the disease? We have my wife, Dr. Lena Brunden. She's particularly interested in inflammation in the brain and how this might exacerbate the Parkinson's disease process and how it might cause depression in the disease. We have a Canadian doctor called Jeremy Van Ramstonk, and he's interested in how aging impacts the disease. He studies this in little worms. And Dr. Katsia, who's joining us this month from California, originally from South Africa, he's interested in genetic risk factors. So these are not genes that are directly causing the disease, but they increase the risk. So you need something in addition to these genes that he will be studying. And we're bringing in a new professor next year, Dr. Labrie, who's French-Canadian, and she's an expert on what's called epigenetics, which is the things that control which genes are active at any given time point. So this is pretty advanced stuff research-wise. And she's a pioneer in that area. She's a young, new professor. There aren't many people who've tackled the role of epigenetics in Parkinson's, but that will be her task. And we are hoping to bring in a clinical scientist and more people. And the interesting thing is, by having this multidisciplinary team, we can look at a problem from very different angles. We are able to collaborate around very innovative projects because we have all these different types of expertise instead of just having the same type of thinking and same type of background.
If you want to learn more, www.vai.org. We're talking to Dr. Patrick Brunden, and I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Dr. Patrick Brunden. Since 2012, he's been the Associate Director of Research for Research Institute and Director of the Institute's Center for Neurodegenerative Science. Doctor, how are you and your team at Van Andel Institute trying to affect Parkinson's patients?
Well, that's a great question, because I have to emphasize we are a research institute. We're actually not a hospital. So we really do want to impact the patient community here in West Michigan and globally. And we have two initiatives that I'd like to mention. One is that we are trying to bring a model for optimal care of Parkinson patients to West Michigan. This is a model that was developed over the last 11 years in the Netherlands. It's called ParkinsonNet. So what does ParkinsonNet do? Well, it turns out that ParkinsonNet was a brainchild of a physiotherapist and a neurologist who said, not all patients in Holland are getting really good care when it comes to their Parkinson's. Some are not even seeing a trained neurologist or a specialist in Parkinson's disease. And most patients are actually not getting adequate physiotherapy. And they gradually, over a decade, developed a method whereby anyone who's diagnosed can find out where are there trained people who know about Parkinson's disease. And the ParkinsonNet team in Holland started to train more and more physiotherapists. They then trained occupational therapists, dietitians, speech therapists, and they got people who were highly specialized in giving the best care. What is the result? Well, most patients in the Netherlands now have access to super trained individuals in each one of these areas, and they have shown that there are less fractures, they don't fall over and fracture their femur, their hips. There are fewer emergency room admissions, and they, of course, as a result, are less likely to end up in a nursing home. These patients do better. They can stay home with their families and their loved ones and lead richer, better lives. And I was fortunate to be invited to Holland about a year ago, and I talked to this team. It was their annual meeting, and I was very excited. And it turned out that the King of the Netherlands, King Willem-Alexander, attended this because his father had Parkinson's disease. And I had a chat with him. It turned out he'd even been to the same school that I'd been in Wales, if you go back in the 70s, where I did my first little project. So we had a connection. And long story short, when the King Willem-Alexander and Queen Maxima came for a visit to the United States, they came to visit us in June. And they brought Dr. Bastian Bloom, who was a neurologist, and Dr. Martin Munneke, who was a physiotherapist, who together had founded ParkinsonNet. So they flew over with them and some other people from the Netherlands. And we decided that we want to do this here in West Michigan. There are so many Dutch descendants here, and it's a perfect community to try to launch a similar model. And just last week, we took another giant leap. We've engaged the local community of hospitals. They're all on board and very enthusiastic. We're engaging the insurance companies, the patient communities all on board, and pushing hard to get this launched here. So our aim is to do this in 2016. Why are we doing this? We're a research institute. Well, because I care about the well-being of the patients, and we care about the well-being of patients, and we also see that this week will be an opportunity for the patients to get access to research, to be part of trials, because they'll come into this network and access not just the best doctors, but the best research that there is. The second initiative, I'll just mention it briefly, is that we're part of an international consortium. It's called the Linked Clinical Trials Consortium, where we, together with a foundation in London called the Cure Parkinson's Trust, are trying to repurpose drugs that currently are being used for example, for the common cold or a cough, or being used for diabetes. And we try them out in Parkinson's. And we're going for that home run, the holy grail, the drug that currently doesn't exist, the drug that would modify disease progression, that would make people, once they're diagnosed, not progress and not get problems of depression and cognitive decline and not end up in a wheelchair. And that's a really exciting initiative, and it's global. These trials are done in the United Kingdom, in the United States, France, Australia, etc. And we are very, very deeply involved in this, and it's true to our mission of trying to impact the lives of humans today. Whereas we think the laboratory research we do here is very important in the long term, these sorts of initiatives, both ParkinsonNet and Link Clinical Trials with the repurposing of drugs, are very important in the more immediate future, in the coming years.
If you want to learn more, www.vai.org. We're talking to Patrick Brunden. He and his wife, Dr. Lena Brunden, have 4 children, and between soccer games in his spare time, Dr. Brunden has published over 300 papers. Doctor, ALS, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, what do they have in common?
That's also a great question, Jack. So these three diseases that you mentioned, and a couple of other of these slowly progressing neurodegenerative diseases, that's the name that they are given as a group, they have certain features that make them look similar. Not only do they progress slowly, but if you look at the brains in a microscope, in virtually all of these diseases, there are clumps of proteins that accumulate inside the nerve cells. And we think those clumps are part of the process that leads to the death of the nerve cells.
The vision of the leadership in Grand Rapids the last 20 years, you have the medical mile, quote-unquote, the health mecca, over $1 billion in infrastructure. Talk about this phenomenal asset we in Michigan have in Grand Rapids?
Well, I wasn't here 25 years ago, but I've been told by many people that, you know, the site where we're sitting right now was a car park, I think, partly, and a home for nursing students. And the transformation up here on the hill has been remarkable. I think it's very unusual to see a city transform like this from a totally different background with a lot of emphasis on the furniture industry to a city where the emphasis is more shifting towards healthcare and obviously research. And I think it's incredible that just a few individuals with their vision, determination, and their resources and their generosity have made that possible. And it's something I think the community should realize that it's extremely rare that this happens anywhere in the world, and they should be proud because it's a remarkable achievement in such a short time.
You and your family came to America 4.5 years ago. You were raised in England and Sweden. Now that you've been in America for 4.5 years, what's the best thing about America?
I think it's the optimism. There is this notion that anything is possible, just like the name of your radio show, and that's a really energizing feeling. And you know, I can see that in our kids. I love Sweden in many ways. It's a wonderful country. There are many aspects of Swedish society that are just also remarkable and wonderful. But this incredible optimism and this feeling of being pioneers, you know, it's still like the immigrants that came 100, 200 years ago. This is a feeling that this society has. And both my wife and I often talk about it, and we're very excited to become part of it, and we enjoy it, and we feel it affects our work. We feel it affects our family in a positive way.
Speaking of affecting in a positive way, look at this story, listeners. Here's a researcher from Sweden meets David Van Andel in Grand Rapids. Both of their dads, born 1924, both of their dads suffer and die because of Parkinson's. And together, these people changing the world. Doctor, keep up the great work. Thanks a million for being a guest.
Thank you for having me on your show, Jack.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohol. Believe in you.